Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I'm Yana. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. Eurozone leaders made Greece surrender much of its sovereignty to outside supervision when they finally acquiesced on the demand, the need for Greece to receive a large infusion of capital. Greece was, as we know, bankrupt. And what was required of Greece as a result of being bankrupt was to lose its sovereignty. You know, it's interesting that Greeks went to the polls and voted for a communist leader. And at the time, Greece's problem was that they had way too much of their overall governance devoted to redistributing wealth, to taking funds from those who were productive and had earned it, and distributing it to those who were less productive, even unproductive, and who had not earned it. And in doing that, in to each according to their need, as decided by those in power, and from each according to their ability, again, in accordance with those who were in power, with those in need exceeding those with ability. Greece did what so many countries have done with fiat money. They have bankrupted the country. They have spent vastly more than can be collected in taxes. And so countries like America with $17 trillion in debt at about 110% of GDP are in the same position of Greece, which has about $350 billion of debt, although it's a lot less. It's a slightly higher percentage of gross domestic product. And it is that socialistic mindset of providing for healthcare for free, pensions that have not been paid for or adequately funded, and all manner of other support systems like pensions and Social Security, food stamps, and other kinds of government programs that bankrupt the country. So the Greeks, not wanting to give up on any of those things, even though they could not afford them, even though they were transferring the burden to their children, even though they were mortgaging their freedom, chose a communist leader. And as a result, the problems were exacerbated. So now Greece is desperate. They're bankrupt. They can no longer pay their bills. They are, by any definition, bankrupt. And as such, Greece was in a position where now it had to receive more money, even though no one in their right mind wanted to loan Greece money, since Greece has consistently failed to honor the terms of loan agreements in the past. So when this new elected president, the communist Tsipras, told the creditors that they were terrorists and that they were blackmailers, he put himself and his country in an extraordinarily bad situation. He has now maligned, with the worst kind of verbiage, those that he needed to continue to fund his country. Otherwise, it's total anarchy and chaos, a complete implosion of Greece. And so the creditors decided, all right, if we don't fund Greece, then we will open up Pandora's box, that people around Europe and around the world will come to see the folly of entitlement and of fiat currency and of central bank and the illusion of all of these things, because, quite frankly, fiat money is actually debt, is a liability, not an asset. And it only works if people maintain their faith in a mythical system. And if Greece fails and you have a country of that size failing, then people's faith diminishes and the whole system is exposed and collapses. So it was obvious that the European bankers were going to fund Greece just to create a continuance of their illusion. But in doing so, Greece was so desperate that they were able to impose their will. And their will is to control. When you have more money, then you play thing to covet is power. And so the central bank throughout Europe now control Greece. Greece had to give up its sovereignty to stay solvent. And that's what this particular article is indicating. And it's important for us to realize that, not because many Americans care one way or another what happens in Greece, just as no one cared with Cyprus. And Cyprus was the ultimate trial balloon in Cyprus for them to resolve their banking crisis. The banks were frozen and people's savings were constrained. And anybody with savings over $100,000 in Cyprus had their savings confiscated by the government. And we can expect some of that going forward in Greece and in other countries. But for now, the bank accounts remain frozen. Greece remains insolvent. They received more of the drug, which is free money, that they had become so dependent upon. And now Greece is in a position where their problems are all worse because now their debt has grown and they couldn't even service their previous debt. And in the process, since the bankers did not trust Greece to honor the terms of the agreement with this new money, the control of Greece, its sovereignty, was handed over to the bankers. You should care about this because Greece is simply the second in a long series of countries that are going to fall. First it was Cyprus, now Greece, losing its sovereignty, which is all that the bankers care about. They have more money than they can spend. So control is what they seek. And Greece. The next country to fall will be Italy. And we'll speak of Rome in a moment. So the Eurozone leaders have now usurped Greek sovereignty. The terms imposed by the international leaders led by Germany and an all-night talk at an emergency summit obliged, this says leftist, he's a communist, Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras to abandon promises of ending austerity. And they were never ending austerity. Greece is in this problem because they were not austere. They weren't even responsible. It is like saying that it would be austere. The imposition of austerity in America, if we were to no longer provide 75 million Americans with food stamps, why would that be a sign of austerity? They not something that they have earned. It's not something that they are making a contribution to society to receive. Is getting something that you have not earned, that you do not deserve, having that stream end. That's not taking something away. That's not being austere. Austerity would be that, for example, that the U.S. government, which spends about $1 trillion a year more than it receives in taxation. Austerity would be that rather than spending $1 trillion more than is received and therefore adding $1 trillion each year to the debt, austerity would be if the U.S. government said, we're going to pay down the debt at $1 trillion a year so that over 17 years we eliminate the debt, and therefore we're going to reduce the size of government expenditure, which would mean Medicare represent about 50 to 60% of government expenditures, and then Department of Defense, which collectively now between the three represent some 85% of government expenditures, that we're going to diminish the size of those three programs, Medicare, Social Security, and Defense, by $2 billion, so that over 17 years we can pay off the debt and unburden our children. Now, if we were to reduce the size of the federal government by 50%, $2 trillion, then that would be a measure of austerity to recover from the gluttonous past. But there is no indication that anyone ever asked Greece to do this. Greece was not running surpluses. They didn't go from adding to the deficit to running surpluses, which would have been required at least some austerity. So this now says that clearly the Europe of austerity has won. This is Greece's reform minister said in a statement. So the Europe of austerity won. So the average debt to GDP of European countries runs between 60 to 80%. Zero debt to GDP would be an indication of being at least responsible and to have a surplus so that you were prepared for rainy days and for unforeseen events would be also responsible. I don't know what would really be required in terms of surpluses to suggest that a country was implementing an austere policy. But Europe is not austere. Europe is continuing to increase debt. And you have countries like Italy, 10% of GDP. So in the case of the rhetoric, the bankers were not blackmailing Greece. The bankers were not terrorists. And there is no austerity in Greece, specifically, or in the rest of Europe. We have been. This one. We'll be back.
This next quote is from the Greece reform minister. It says, either we're going to accept these draconian measures, or it is sudden death for our economy through the continuation of the closure of the banks. So it is an agreement that is practically forced upon us. This is Greece's reform minister. You know, when you're in debt, let's say that you buy a home on a mortgage, and that you bought this home with an 80% mortgage, and you have are no longer able to make the payments on that home, and you stop making the payments on the home. The home is now collateral to the bank. If you stop making payments on the home, the bank takes title to your home. It's already been given to them in the mortgage that you signed, and so you might live in it for a short while, but they will dictate the terms because you've deeded the home over to them by not paying your bills. It is astonishing to me that people who have caused problems have this tendency not only to blame others for their problems, but never to accept responsibility themselves. We are an irresponsible generation. And we're irresponsible in two ways. One is we are taking money from our children. That's irresponsible. When you fund programs out of debt, you are forcing your children to pay for your indulgences. That's immoral. That's not responsible. When you create entitlement programs that provide pensions and free medical care to those who did not work for these things, who did not save for these things, who just expect government to provide them, who have become dependent on government, who are not sufficiently productive to be able to afford these things, and you take from those who are productive, diminishing not only any enthusiasm they would have to build their businesses by punishing success, but also removing capital from those businesses, which diminishes the equipment that they can buy and the people that they can hire and throttles their growth. So you have economics that punishes success and rewards failure. That's not responsible. But the worst part of it, and what we see in Greece, and we see elsewhere, even in this country, is that those that have caused that problem by either voting for politicians who have implemented these kinds of plans, you know, go all the way back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt with his New Deal, and then to Lyndon Baines Johnson with his Great Society that put these programs in place, and then with the hypocritical Republicans that gave lip service to conservatism, but yet actually increased government spending. Ronald Reagan was a classic case that he gave lip service to being conservative, and yet so enormously increased the expenditures for the military, a liberal use of monetary funds for the military, that he drove larger deficits. And then, of course, George W. Bush, claiming to be a conservative, he inherited a $250 billion surplus, largely the result of the contract with America, and during the Clinton years, and Newt Gingrich, who was the primary author of that, and turned it into a $1.5 trillion deficit. So politicians on both sides are irresponsible because it is by giving people that which they do not deserve, free prescription drugs, free medical care, essentially free retirement that pays people vastly more than they paid into the system, recognizing that the money that was paid into the system was already spent and not on other indulgences and not put aside for their retirement. They've already enjoyed the benefit of the money they contributed through just regular government expenditures. So you have politicians that are irresponsible this way, but those who are electing them are equally irresponsible. For example, the current president, he's a socialist. He and Tsipras would agree on all of these kinds of things, that we need to increase taxes on those who are productive and provide ever more entitlements to those who are not. So the problem was created by the dependents, by those who are dependent upon government. And yet they're blaming those that have loaned them money.
I don't know if you all remember, but I certainly do. About 2 months ago, we had one of our favorite contributors to this show use Shakespearean references, and may have been my summation of him that turned Shakespearean, and spoke of the summer of our discontent. And his prognostication was that with the Greece monetary crisis looming, with the rise of the Islamic State, with the United States recreating the Cold War with Russia over the Ukraine, and with the continued indebtedness of the United States, and particularly the militarization of its police, and the failures of the Justice Department regarding these police killings, and the literally we've turned our FBI into a national policing agency full with military hardware. Glenn said, "You know, I'm really worried. This summer could be extraordinarily painful." And so we have Glenn here now. Glenn, what do you think?
Oh, things are exceedingly hairy. I actually probably got on my contrarian hat a bit this morning.
Okay.
And I was going to say that I agree with you about responsibility and productivity mm-hmm. as someone who works a fairly grueling schedule.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm ambivalent about social safety nets and programs and entitlements and stuff like that. I think if entrepreneurs were more like Henry Ford and paid their employees a good wage so that they could afford to put money back into the economy, yeah, I think that's, you know, and if taxation is lower so people have money to spend, I think that fuels a vibrant economy. I can hardly think of anyone less productive than private central bankers, because they have nothing of any real value to lend. They turn around in their chairs. Mm-hmm. They type numbers in the computer, pretend that they've invented money, and then they pretend to lend it. And from the very moment they enter those numbers, there's less money in circulation than is owed, and therefore, from the very first dollar lent, the debt is unrepayable.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is a vaporware Ponzi scheme.
Right. Let's talk about these things in order. In terms of a social safety net, we've talked at length in this program about Yahweh's covenant plan, which he describes in great detail. I happen to think that God's a fairly credible planner in this regard, and that his guidance makes sense, and that his guidance is essentially that you don't give anyone, no one donates money, no one takes money, no one redistributes money, that instead of doing it the way that we have done it, which is you confiscate money from one group and you hand money over to another group, his plan was that you make the means to shelter, the means to clothing, the means to feed your family available to those who are willing to make a contribution to the process. So you leave a portion of the field unharvested if the person wants food.
Right. One past harvest, yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so you, the person who is hungry, who doesn't have the means to buy food, can harvest food. They have to work on it, and then they have to prepare the food and cook the food on their own. If they don't have energy to cook the food, there is a repository in each community of wood that is donated, and they can use the wood either for fires, and in this case you'd have a means to energy and also to build shelter, but they're building a shelter. They also had a repository of wool and linen so that someone could make clothes, but they're going to have to put effort in the process, which means it doesn't destroy their character and it doesn't create a dependency society. And dependency society is the thing that is so horrid. So, you know, I'm in favor of taking care of the poor in such a way that those who, for whatever reason, can't fund their own clothing, shelter, food, and immediate medical necessities, have those made available so long as they're willing to make a contribution to the process.
Right, and if you look at Yahweh's system of tithes and offerings, it's considerably less burdensome and draconian than our own.
And it really doesn't have a tithe in the sense of the
right.
Hebrew word for tithe that is used for right. Tithe really means a tenfold enrichment and empowerment is the word. But he does have a voluntary system, not a tax system, where people are encouraged to provide wood, wool, linen, and make foodstuff available. But there is no one who is ever paid, and there's no money that is ever taken.
Right. I was going to point something out about Social Security. I know you're not fond of it, but
yes.
That was a government-mandated, fully funded program until Bill Clinton raided it and put government IOUs in place of money and claimed to have achieved a freedom from
it. Yeah, that's not really true. There's never been a trust fund for Social Security. It's always been a Ponzi scheme. It began by giving people money they had not contributed to it, and there's no correlation between one's contribution to it and the money they receive out of it. And 100% of what has been contributed to Social Security was spent in the general fund the year the money was confiscated for it. So it's a Ponzi scheme. Now, it's always been a Ponzi scheme, and it's always been spent in the general fund. The Ponzi scheme is defined by the newest people. The money that they pay in goes to pay the return for those who have been in, whose money has already been squandered. So it requires the absolute and required performance of new victims for the Ponzi scheme to remain alive. And so it's a Ponzi scheme.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, Let me go to the next point that you raised,
which is that of the bankers. Well, I am no fan of international bankers. I really don't have a problem with only have one issue really with local bankers that are in private banks as opposed to the cartels that are central banks. With only one exception, and this one exception was actually imposed by the Federal Reserve. It was not something that exists originally, which is the Mandrake formula and fractional reserve banking, where if you contribute $100 to a deposit, they not only can loan out 90% of your deposit, but when that borrower then has the account that money goes into, then they can loan out 90% of that, and whoever that was given to, they can loan out 90% of that, and they do it 10 times over. So ultimately, they have loaned out 10 times more than were in deposits. And so the Federal Reserve was created that scenario to keep any one bank from failing, because this overburdened amount of loans as a percentage of deposits was covered by the collective whole, or by the creation of more fiat money diluting the existing currency. But that's something that was the cartel, that is the Federal Reserve, imposed. If I were to pick the primary culprit here, I'm going to go back two steps. And feel free to disagree here. I'm going to go back two steps from the international bankers. I'm going to go one step back to the politicians who enabled them. Like, for example, the Federal Reserve was enabled by Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson, right.
And his Colonel House, that was really the de facto president during his time. And it's always created primarily to fund a standing army and to encourage war, which creates great borrowing and dependence and enormous amounts of money for the few, and gives the government draconian control over its population. So the politicians who enable these things, and the politicians who win approval of the people by offering these kinds of things. If the majority of people in America are net beneficiaries of government handouts, then the majority of Americans are going to vote for the leaders that are going to indulge them and continue to indulge them. And the minority are paying the bills, and so the minority cannot affect leadership change. And so, then I would go one step back from the politicians who have enable all of these bankrupt, irresponsible redistribution of wealth schemes, to the people themselves being greedy, being irresponsible for having chosen them, having empowered them. So I think that we ourselves as a nation individually are responsible for the mess that we're in, and yet no one wants to claim responsibility for it. As a matter of fact, the politicians will say, you know, the problem is those greedy people, they're not paying their fair share. Well, they aren't paying their fair share. They're paying 10, 20, 30 times a higher percentage than are those who are net dependents.
Right. But even a half century before Woodrow Wilson, you know, Abraham Lincoln tries to issue currency from the treasury and gets himself killed for it. 50 years after Woodrow Wilson, Kennedy tries it and he gets himself killed for it.
Yeah, you know, the notion, as I have investigated the claims of Kennedy was killed for the alleged bill changing the nature of what the Federal Reserve could and couldn't do, I have found that most of that is supported only on conspiracy sites, and I have been unable to find any verification for that apart from conspiracy sites.
He certainly managed to anger a number of different people.
Yeah,
okay. So it may have been part of the laundry list.
I don't think that's what got Kennedy killed. But I will go and I will agree with you on Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was second only to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was the most unconstitutional president that we have had in this country. Abraham Lincoln was the antithesis of what he has been perceived to be in terms of the shrines that we have built to him. But not only was he a racist, but he was completely anti-constitutional. We'll be back. We're talking about the implosion of events that has come upon us. And Glenn, how do you feel now about the combination of ills that is at our doorstep? You had forecast a fairly negative summer, and you and I agreed that what you were talking about would happen. I just said I'm not certain it's going to be this summer versus a summer 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years hence. But collectively, you were concerned about Greece. The Greece concern is still valid. You were concerned about the Islamic State. It's still valid. You were concerned about the continued sinkhole that America is sliding into. That's still valid. And you were most concerned, I think, about the problems associated with the militarization of America's police and federal agents. Where do you stand?
It's interesting. I was also concerned about the inflammation or the fomenting of interracial tensions of the summer with Ferguson and Baltimore and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have, so far, ducked up bullet since this shooting at this church, in which these people responded in an amazingly magnanimous manner about it, like decrying violence and speaking of, like, forgiveness and that sort of thing. In other words, we haven't seen repeat Ferguson's and stuff, and even the Baltimore thing kind of fizzled. So I'm grateful that we're not seeing American cities in flames from, trumped up interracial violence. So that's a good thing.
As I look at it, too, I don't think race had anything to do with Ferguson. Like, I think it had nothing to do with Ferguson. There's lots of issues where I would put lots of blame on both sides, and if you're in the African American community, you ought not rally around Brown. He was a scumbag. But it's true that Wilson, as a cop, went to the current first mentality of a cop, which is to shoot first, and we ought not train cops to respond that way. That's a belligerence that is wholly and completely unacceptable. The ones that bothered me the most, Tamir Rice is the one that bothered me the most. This is a Caucasian police officer jumping out of his car and killing what he was, a 12-year-old African-American boy playing with a pretend gun that was no threat to anybody, and within 2 seconds or less of the time that the cop pulls up on the grass near that carousel, the kid is dead. If I had racial inclinations, I'd have been all over that one. And the one in New York where New York just paid the family millions and millions of dollars for wrongful death, killing that man for trying to break up a fight with a chokehold. It's hard to imagine that racism didn't play into both of those two events, because it's the atrocities were egregious. I do think that there's more racism today between of blacks towards whites. The crime statistics bear that out by a magnitude of about tenfold. There's people like Roof, the idiot that gunned down the people in the African American church that are racist on the white side. I think there's fewer of them as a per capita than there are African American races. But I do think we're galvanizing as a world towards racial extremes. I think anti-Semitism is growing, and right. The minority, you know, a lot of the conservative view towards immigration is racial.
Right, right. Well, with these repeated outing of George Soros and his ilk, you know, these people right. were shipping people in by buses to foment this stuff.
Right.
He defaulted on his payments to people when they protested him right. and that got out. So, that issue, you know, doesn't seem to be inflaming. Well, the market, yeah. you know, fluctuations and volatility is still an issue. But here's a wild card for you.
Mm-hmm.
I heard someone yesterday predicting, this isn't something, you know, I'd explain to you, but I thought it was interesting that somebody had, you know, the temerity to say that they expected in September 25th, when the Pope's over here, he's going to announce, you know, a new thrust into a global government. And in October, Christine Lagarde is going to announce a global currency reset. And this will be yeah. followed by civil wars and stuff like that. I thought, that, in other words, it's the magnitude of all these things is actually allowing for people to come out and say things like that.
Yeah, I think that those things are going to happen, but I think they're a decade off. So I think their timing is wrong.